Hey guys,
I'm Hallie
and I'm Jamie
and this is Literal Nonsense.
Episode 30!
Holy crap, that was aggressive.
I knew that. You didn't know I was going to do that?
I didn't. And I didn't know.
I just wanted to do it.
Okay.
That's Rock a big out. Deal.
Rock out.
What it's is? A big deal. Episode 30?
Oh. I'm like
the
delayed.
Fuck? Okay.
Yes, 30.
That's 30 a big.
Weeks, essentially.
And it happens to be my favorite season of the year. Spooky season. That's real though. That's true. I'm so fucking excited. And we are kicking off spooky season. We actually, number one, we said, oh, we'll do every other Sunday. And I just love spooky season so much that I conned Hallie into doing another book this month.
Yes.
So we'll actually have 3 episodes in October just because we wanted to do so many spooky books.
Mm-hmm.
But we kicked it off with a doozy.
Yes. I don't really know how I feel about this one.
Okay. Well, so our first book in the roster of spooky season spookiness, we read Pet Sematary by Stephen King. I've read one Stephen King before this, but you know, he is like the man of horror.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Right. And so I felt like, what better man to begin spooky season with?
You know, I feel like sometimes, you know, like we read these books and then we talk about them and I'm like, am I just a hater?
Oh boy. Well, I don't know your thoughts, but I'm getting a vibe.
Yeah.
Okay. So Stephen King, we also chose this book, to be fair, number one, I've heard about it. I had seen the movie. It was actually my first scary movie I ever saw. I'm a little pussy bitch, and I don't like scary things. So I refused to watch scary movies until I was like 14, and this was the first one I saw.
Interesting.
I can actually distinctly remember. I was in my parents' living room, and it was my parents and my like family friend Cassandra. Don't know why, but that's what was happening. And so it's popular, but also, to be completely honest, it's one of his shortest books, and we were not trying to, like, read it, like the book.
It. Oh,
it. Yeah, I realized with your blank stare that you had no idea what I was saying.
So what are you talking about?
Yeah,
because yeah, that's really long. That's, like, almost 1,000 pages.
Yeah, we just weren't doing all that. So
no, that's too much.
That's how we landed on Pet Sematary.
I mean, I guess maybe I'm just like uninformed. I've never really read any horror or
okay.
scary books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like scary movies. My first scary movie was the original Poltergeist. And
nice.
I remember my parents were downstairs and they were watching it. And I like creeped down the stairs and it was like standing like in the foyer area because we had like a direct sight of the TV. And it was the scene where, like, he's in the bathroom and he's, like, peeling his face off.
Yeah.
I was probably, like, 6 or 7. And that
wow.
really freaked me out. And I refused Fair. To watch any scary movies until I turned into a teenager and was...
That'll you know, do it.
You know.
My parents, I don't know if you knew this about me. My parents were super into Halloween when I was a child. To the point, like, we had, like, a spooky house every Halloween. I don't know, like not a haunted house, but they would dress up every Halloween and chase children around our neighborhood, like for blocks.
Yeah, you did tell me that.
To the point where like people from like the tri-state area were like coming to our house. People were like, oh, we drove from Connecticut. And I was like, oh geez. And that really fucked me up as a kid because my mom like would always wear like contacts or just like look really like spooky. Like she was good at spooky makeup. And, like, I wouldn't even talk to her, like on Halloween, and like she used to try to have me sit in the bathroom and be like, look, like it's makeup, I'm putting it on. And I was like, I understand it's you, like you look fucking scary, Laura, like I don't want to hold your hand. And they were very open with their spooky opinions. Like the one year distinctly I was in first grade and I dressed as Belle from Beauty and the Beast, the classic yellow dress. And my mom was like, you disgust me. Like, she gagged. She was like, princess. She's like, can we put some blood on you? And I was like, no, bitch. I want to be a fucking princess. So they were very opinionated. There's pictures of me as, like, a one-year-old. Probably not even, actually. Maybe, like, a little bit over or under one. I don't know which Halloween this fell on. But it's me, like, sitting as an infant covered in, like, gray face paint and blood. And, like, this, like, their front yard was, like, a gravestone, like, graveyard with tombstones. And there's pictures of me, like, sitting in it. And people used to think I was a decoration and I would start moving. So, spooky vibes started real early for me. I should, like, find some of these pictures and put them on the Instagram.
Oh, my God. This is hilarious, actually. Well, your contact photo is, like, the one of you, like, when you're young.
Yes, yes. We'll put that one on the Instagram, too. Yeah, no, this was, like, always my life. And we loved Halloween. Like, Chelsea used to come and stuff. And, like, our parents would all be scaring kids. And we'd have, like, a record of, like, how many kids cried. And they would, like, order us pizza inside and be like, go eat your pizza and count your candy. Because I would, like, go trick-or-treating with, like, other people that were responsible adults. Mm-hmm. And I would come back to that. And it would go to, like, midnight, 1 a.m.
That's really –
The next morning, we had, like, a lost and found because people would, like, ditch their bikes and, like, not come back.
What?
Yeah, it was, like, a whole, like, legit thing. My dad would, like, build things for this. Like, someone used to stand, like a ghost costume. And so he built, like, a platform with a fan underneath it that would, like, blow air so they were floating. It was, like, a whole – it was really quite elaborate.
Wow.
So also part of the reason I mentioned that is a little shout out to my dad – well, my mom too, I guess. But it was his copy of Pet Sematary that I read, which was nice. Because they just – that's the only novels they have. It's like horror books or like Wiccan things. There's no novels.
That's so funny.
Yeah, so I was excited to like dive into that because that's like the only books I ever like saw in my house growing up. And clearly this deferred me from horror for a while, from, like, scary movies and stuff.
Yeah.
So I also really haven't read horror.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously Stephen King is a box office name for sure.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me to name any of his books, I am not able to do that. But, like, I know yes, he you writes can. Horror. Besides literally... It and Pet Sematary, I don't know any other ones.
The Shining. You do know that.
Oh, okay, yeah. I do know The Shining.
Which I'd be intrigued to read.
Which is a really good movie, by the way.
It is. It is. I had read the only thing I read by him was The Outsider.
Never read it.
Yeah, it wasn't like super whatever. But I do know the other like the classic ones like The Shining and It. Mm-hmm.
I mean, which... I will say I was very initially turned off to reading Pet Sematary just because I was like, oh my God, there's going to be dead animals and I don't want to deal with that. Like I get very fucking... I don't know, like, really weird about, like, animals and dead animals and, like...
Of course you do.
No, like, I'm like it's actually kind of bad. Like, I... Like, if I see a dead animal on the side of the road, like, I start to cry.
Amelia...
And I don't know what it is.
...has a similar thing. Not... I don't know if she sees them and cries, but, like, if we're watching a show or, like, I've seen a show before her and there's, like, say, like, a dog in the show, she'll literally text me and be like... Does it die? If so, I'm not continuing. And I'm like, okay. So I have to like spoil things for her because she won't get involved.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I don't that's know, like
man. A something with the animals.
It's a human reaction. But so yeah, so Pet Sematary, I was excited to read. So as I just mentioned, that was my first scary movie I saw. I know we have different experiences, but I knew what I was going into reading this book. I knew what to expect. I was just eager to read it. In words versus like seeing the movie.
Yeah.
Whereas you had not a clue.
I had no idea. Like none at all. I mean, I like figured obviously like, okay, Pet Sematary. So there's going to be a cemetery of like dead animals. And some weird shit's going to happen. But that's the extent.
And I actually think, so I want to start by saying with his writing, I'm intrigued, and I would read like It and The Shining. I'm intrigued. Now, I also think with his writing, it was very much so a slow burn, which we're going to talk about. But I think I actually enjoyed it more knowing what was going to happen because, like, I was like, fuck, like, you know, the whole time because I knew what was going to happen. Yeah. And I think with his writing style, that almost made it better because it was such like a slow, meticulous burn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was almost making me more anxious. I'm like, when's it going to happen? You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, okay, like, I can appreciate a slow burn for sure, but I think the fact that I didn't know what was going to happen, so then I was just getting annoyed, like, when I thought it was going to happen, and then, like, it was just, like, more, like, lore, essentially.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, bro, well, can we just get to, you know, something?
Right, like, the climax. Because I'm getting tired. Yeah.
Like, for the first, honestly, probably, like, my book had a little, like, 450 pages or something, a little bit more than that.
Okay,
it really wasn't until probably, like, almost 300 that I was, like, able to just, like, read and read and read.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. And so I guess let's dive into the plot and stuff. So the synopsis starts off
Pet
just...
Cemetery. Here we go.
Just your average all-American family. We have the Creeds. We have Lewis and his wife, Rachel. And they are moving. He got a new job. They're moving to Maine. And they have like this like old Victorian house, and they have, you know, their two kids, 0.5 animals, and a picket fence. But in all seriousness, they have a daughter, Ellie. She's five. They have a son, Cage. Is that right? Yes. No. Gage with a G. I knew I was like,
the kid's definitely not named Cage, but it sounded right in the moment.
It did, and it's Gage, so really, we're not doing much better.
Jage Creed.
No, it's not Jage.
Creed Bratton.
I would like it better.
All the ones who know who Creed Bratton is.
I don't.
Freak.
Office. Sorry.
No.
Oh. I do now.
The weird guy who keeps like the little nuts in his
throat. I didn't know his last name. That was where I think it was throwing me off. I would like his name better if it was Cage Creed because it's like at least alliteration. Anyways, but his name is Gage, so it's fine. Gage. So there's Gage and he's like two-esque, right? Like he's a toddler.
Yeah, and now this is like where I get confused because like I don't really have much experience with children.
I'm sure everyone's shocked by that.
So, like, to me, like, if someone's two, like, they're still in a diaper and you have to carry them around everywhere. They're still able to do anything. That's, like, what my brain thinks.
No, he actually wrote them pretty accurately for their ages.
Interesting, because there were a few times in the book I was like, this kid's two? Like, he's acting like he's, like, five. I'm so confused. But that's just me, not...
I think he wrote Ellie a little bit mature, like, the conversation she was having... but no, I think they're pretty accurate. Also, Stephen King wrote this. His foreword of the book was very interesting. And this book essentially was like situations very closely related to things that happened to him, but like the what ifs things went wrong. Mm-hmm. And I liked that part about it too.
Yeah, that was cool.
Because I think it made it really realistic. And they also, okay, so we have the Creeds, family of four, and there's a cat. It's Ellie's cat. His name is Church.
Winston Churchill.
Yes, it is. And she loves this cat. Loves, loves, loves. So they move to this wonderful house. And across the road, we have a wonderful couple. We have Judd and Norma. Of course, their names are Judd and Norma.
They're old.
And they're just, yeah, they're just old, sweet,
like
old-timers, American.
You know? Yeah.
The kind of family you'd want as neighbors,
yeah,
you know?
Very Yankee slang.
Yes, yes. And so I will say, I know some people with Stephen King, they get a little turned off by like how much detail he gives. I think it set the scene. Like I saw exactly where we were.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the family.
Yeah.
We were good to go.
Yeah. I think I was like impatient, like to know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So like, because he was like being like so thorough with like explaining every minute detail, I was getting annoyed as well.
I could see both sides.
But, like, thinking back on it now, like, I appreciate that as a reader. But just, like, in the moment, because I was impatient, I, like, was not about it.
Right. Yeah, it's more the impatience rather than, like, the actual not liking it.
Yeah.
And so the beginning starts off kind of like it's a normal life. They're unpacking, yada, yada. But our buddy Judd is like, hey, guys, you have this neat thing in your property. It's a pet cemetery. You want to go to it? Which, I wouldn't love.
No, I'd probably move.
Yeah?
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. Especially if there's kids involved. I don't know.
It's far away, though. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I don't know. After reading this book, I think whenever I end up buying a house, I'm going to be doing a lot of checks.
All right, fair. And so he brings them up this hill, you know, up the hill, around the bend, to the pet cemetery. And everyone buries their animals there from, like, the fucking dawn of time, basically.
The turn of the century, the 1900s.
Yeah, right.
1800s.
And so...
2000? 20th century? I always get confused because it's like the 1900s, but that's the 20th century. You know correct. What I mean?
Yes. I agree.
And like the 2000s is like the 21st century, which is just, I don't understand why it's like that.
Couldn't tell you, but I agree. But yes, yeah, so that was the 20th anyways. Century. But so they go to this pet cemetery.
Just to clarify.
Right. Just in case you guys also needed help. And so Ellie starts asking a lot of questions about death. Now, the mom is a fucking freak with death because her... her sister died when she was a child, which we'll get more into. Basically, mom is like, doesn't even want to have a conversation about death. And our boy Lewis, he's like, hey, it's part of life. Yeah. And he's like, it's part of life, whatever.
Well, he's also a doctor. So, like,
yeah, he's like, this is what happens. We'll tell her honestly, whatever. So Ellie's really scared that like church is going to die. She's like, cats die. Like, not my cat, please. Which I feel that on a real level, Ellie. Yeah. I understand.
Yes.
I battle with that every day. I'm like, are they okay? So we kind of are getting introduced to just this idea of death super early on, which I liked that overall vibe throughout the book. Even with Rachel and her sister, I liked that it was like a conversation. Even at the slow points, it was really like getting the point home about like, just death and dying. Which, you know.
Okay.
Joyous. Well, because in the beginning of the book, I think Stephen King, I guess, said it, and like Judd says it in the book, like, sometimes dead is better.
Yeah.
And that was like the overall motto of the book.
The book, yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, it's like that can be applied to anything. It's like if someone's suffering with a disease, like sometimes like just dead is almost more merciful and better.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Stephen like, King takes that to a whole new fucking artistic level.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. So, like, his relationship that grows with Judd is, like, really wholesome in the beginning. And yes. I mean, like, it's wholesome throughout as well. But, like, I feel like things didn't really start to click.
For you?
Until the end. So, like, I don't know. Do we want to just, like, get into the meat of it?
I mean, yeah, because the meat of it really starts, not the meat, but, like, the...
far in the book.
It is far, but things start, the wheels start turning on Lewis Creed's first day of work. He's working at a college, and they're like, oh, you know, you get sore throats and nothing crazy happens. And his first day of work, a fucking kid gets hit by a car and, like, bleeds out on his office floor.
Yeah.
And which there's is like
crazy because he goes into like detail of like his like brain matter oozing on the carpet.
Yes, very detailed.
And I was like, that's crazy.
That's fucked up.
And that made me think of in It Ends With Us when Ryle is like saying he was like trying to scoop his dead brother's brain back into his head.
Yeah, that also has to be traumatizing. We're like, oh, Ryle, we have a new empathy for you. And as this guy is dying, what's his name? Victor Pascal, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that name is brought up so much. Oh my God, yeah. But isn't that funny? Half the books we read, we can't remember their names. And this book, I'm like, I know everyone's name, their age. Like,
yeah.
Like, he does a good job of making you remember his characters. Yeah. And so Victor is dying, and he's being spooky. He just starts, like, prophesizing? I don't even know the word.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. While he's dying.
Yeah, he's pretty much like, don't go beyond the barrier of the pet cemetery. And I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah, Victor. He's like, don't pass the deadfall.
Yes. And because, yes.
And, you know, he eventually just dies. But then he gets haunted. Lewis gets haunted by Victor.
Yes, Victor. And he brings him to the pet cemetery.
Yeah.
In a dream.
Like, yeah. And he's like, do not go past here.
Yeah, he literally shows him. He was like, in case my dying words weren't enough for you, I'm going to show you. Don't do this. And this part started spooking me a little. Not to the point where I was like, couldn't go to the bathroom alone at night. But I was like, ooh, it's eerie. Because then Lewis wakes up from this dream and he's like, well, that was very real feeling. And he goes to get out of bed and his feet are covered in dirt. And I was like, no, thank you. Nope. Absolutely not, actually.
I mean,
like, not, I wasn't like, I can't read anymore, I'm so scared, but I was like, if that fucking happened to me, I'd have a heart attack and die.
Oh. I'd probably be like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Hell no. If a dead man came to me and brought me up into the fucking woods.
Maybe he was warning him. He wasn't doing anything malicious. He was looking out for him.
Actually, yeah, Victor was a real one.
If anything, Victor is the, what's it called?
The unsung hero?
Yeah. No, what's the Good Samaritan?
Yeah, Victor was. Victor was like,
you know, like, you in his dying breath, he could have been like, tell my mom I love her. But instead he was like, don't go past the deadfall, Lewis.
Yeah, he had like a girlfriend who watched him get hit by the car. He was like, fuck her.
Yeah.
Deadfall, bad news.
No words for her, but
none.
Well, anyway, so obviously there's like some type of lore that is surrounding this pet cemetery and what is beyond the deadfall, right?
Right, right.
And doesn't Judd mention something as well about the deadfall? He's like, oh, you shouldn't go past that too?
Yeah, Judd like briefly mentions it. And he also just seems like he knows something, but he's just like not saying or not willing to. And we're like, you know, put that in your back pocket for later, I think, early on.
I mean, like, I thought it was interesting how he's like naming all these people who have like buried all their dead animals in the pet cemetery. And he's like listing them all off. He was like, oh, my dog Spot was up there and all this stuff. And then like Lewis, obviously, because this is just natural human thinking, is like, oh, have any humans been buried up there? And Judd was like, don't ever say that. Like, why would you say that? No, that's never happened. Like, he gets like mad fucking defensive.
Was that before or after church? I think it was after church. So we'll talk about church now. Yes, because Lewis was like, it was when he knows what happens. And he's like, has they ever buried a human up there? And Judd was like, do not do that.
Oh, yeah.
But Judd, where we first start knowing, backtracking slightly, we know that something's going on because Judd mentions or shows Lewis and his family the grave marker for his dog Spot and was like, Spot died of old age at the age of 10 or whatever. And Lewis is like, great. And that's mentioned early on. Then we're talking to Judd more and he's mentioned something about like, oh, my dog got hit by a car and died. And Lewis is like, I'm confused because that makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Twice.
Right. And he's like, right, hello. And so Lewis hates Rachel's family. That's like not super important, but either way, he fucking hates them. And so Rachel's going away for Thanksgiving and Lewis is like, actually, I'm going to stay here because fuck your family. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So Rachel takes the kids, goes to wherever the fuck her family's from. Lewis stays.
Chicago.
Okay, great. And of course,
okay, great.
Like, of fucking course, while they're gone, the cat gets hit by a car and dies. Because of course your child's pet dies when they're gone, you know?
Well, I think it's important to mention too, because this is also a really good play in foreshadowing. So like the first day that they move in, Lewis notes like the big 18-wheelers that are just barreling down the road. And then when Judd comes over and introduces himself, like one of the first things he says is like to be careful of the road, especially since you have young ones. And he was like, and if you have any pets.
And yeah, he was like, this road isn't friendly for pets and small children.
Yeah. And then even throughout, before, you know, things actually start happening, there's always the mention of like, oh, I heard, you know, another Orinco truck barreling down the road. And like that, it was like always mentioned like in the background.
Yeah. And it's like you can, and with Stephen King, which I appreciate, you never know what's like important, or he just writes every detail so meticulously. You're like, oh, maybe he's just setting the scene. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he wants to set the scene that you can hear a truck go by.
Yeah.
And sometimes those details are insignificant, and other times you're like, oh, well, that was important, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I like that, because some authors, when they say something over and over again, you're like, oh, I gotta know this. Mm-hmm. With him, he says everything so detailed that you don't necessarily know it in the moment.
Yeah.
But then you can look back and say, oh, yeah, those trucks are around all the fucking time, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. So Church gets hit by one, and the cat's dead. Right?
Dead.
Like, they're sure it's dead. And Judd is, like, acting mad weird. He's like, do you love your daughter, Lewis? And Lewis is like, yeah, of course I love my daughter. He's like, no, but do you really love her? And Lewis is like, yes, Judd. Like, what the fuck?
He's like, yeah, man, why are you fucking questioning me?
And he was like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to put the cat in a garbage bag, and we're going to meet at this time, and we're going to go up to the pet cemetery. And Lewis is like, okay.
Well, like, he likes Judd, so he's like, fine.
Yeah, like, he wants, I think a part of it, like, because he mentions, too, like, okay, so, like, there's not any information about Lewis's family or, like, him growing up.
No.
All he mentions is that he never had a father figure until he was, like, 45, right? And he so he doesn't have a good relationship with his in-laws either, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I think it's also, it plays into, like, him wanting to maybe make Judd proud in a way, or, like, you know what I mean?
Well, he mentions in the beginning, like, I moved in and gained a father figure. Yeah. Like, this is his. Yeah, so I think that is a good point that you make.
So, like,
that
he's, like, taking his word as, like, gold. And, like, you know.
He's like, sure, like, you seem older and wiser, like, mm-hmm. and you also know the area, whatever. Like, if you feel so passionately, he's like, fuck it.
Yeah. What was that saying that when you were younger, and it's like, oh, like, if your friend said something, like, are you going to go do that too? Remember that?
If your,
like,
friend jump off a bridge, are you going to jump too?
Yeah, something like, yeah. Like, I feel like if Judd was jumping off a bridge, Lewis was also jumping off a bridge.
For sure. And so they go up to the fucking, yeah. They march up there.
Ding, ding, ding. And obviously, maybe I'm just so smart, I knew they were going to go past the deadfall, obviously.
For sure.
But again, it's, like, that fact of, like, he's not even, like, questioning Judd. Like, he's, like, he has, like, his, like, moments of, like, what are we doing? Like, he's, like, remembering the warning, but, like, he's still going.
Yeah, and I think, but it also is, it's Judd, right? But also, as the book goes on, this place has an inherent living power to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so crazy.
So Judd's, like, an 85-year-old man, but he's climbing this deadfall, and he's, like, a spring chicken.
Yeah, and he's like, Lewis, be confident.
Yeah, and Lewis is like, what? But, like, Lewis is also realizing that, like, you know, he's able to lug this cat and his tools up the mountain
mm-hmm.
to get wherever it is that they're going. And all the while, like, Judd, like, isn't really talking to him.
He's giving him, like, bleak, like,
like, not just little, warnings. Like, instructions.
Yeah, like, he'll be like, oh, if you hear weird noises, it's just some birds. Keep walking. Like, don't look down. Like, he'll just say, like, things.
Yeah, so, which is interesting because obviously, like, they're going through and he's, like, they hear, like, this crazy, like, maniacal laughter. And, like, Lewis stops, like, dead in his tracks. And Judd, like, turns around. He's like, Lewis, keep going.
Don't. Yeah, he's like, those noises, they're not, like, they're birds. Like, they just sound weird.
And then, but then,
like, my God, Judd!
Yeah, but, like, he's also explaining it that there's, like, loons down at the bottom of the mountain. Like, an old psych whatever was there. And, like, the people just live there now or some crazy shit like that. Mind you, this all takes place in the 80s, which I feel like if there was ever a time to get away with anything, it was the 50s to the 80s. Just saying.
Agreed. Holy.
Like, this would not be happening now.
No, now, never.
You could not. But anyways. So they make it up to the top. And there's, like, another cemetery.
Burial ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And Judd's like, this is where the magic happens.
Literally.
Well, he doesn't say that, but, like.
No, but he's like, we're burying the cat here. And he still doesn't tell Lewis anything. He's like, bury your cat. And he's being very, like you said, like instructional. Like, Lewis, pick up the shovel. Lewis, bury your cat. Do a good job. Do you love your daughter? And he's like, yeah, bro. What the fuck? Like, okay. So he buries the cat. They walk back and Judd's like, come over tomorrow and we'll chit chat. And Lewis is like, that was fucking bizarre. Like,
But then he also mentions, right, it's like the next day and he, like when he first wakes up and he like, it doesn't feel real. Like he almost forgot like
that this all happened. Yes. But he says like, he's like a little sore. Like when they're doing all this, he's like, wow, I should be like winded, but I'm not. And like the next day he's like, oh, now I'm feeling it, whatever. And so Lewis is just minding his own damn business this nice, fine morning without his family. And I think he's, like, working on his car or something. And then
the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, here walks in the cat.
Yeah.
And Lewis is like, what?
I thought you were dead.
And so he's like, oh, I dreamed he died. I dreamed we went up there. Perfect. No big deal. And then he looks at the cat, and the cat has, like, the bag remnants on its whiskers. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. And he's like, okay, well, I guess I'm going over to Judd's house.
Yeah. Like, right, he starts, now, like, hypothesizing, right? Like, yeah. Oh, like, maybe he wasn't dead. Maybe he was just unconscious. But, like, this is where I start to realize, I think, that, like, I wouldn't say if Lewis is an unreliable narrator, but he's definitely he's not very reliable.
I think Lewis is a little crazy.
Yeah, and then, you know, I'll beg the question after we finish talking about the whole book, you know, was Lewis ever, you know, mentally there to begin with?
Mm.
But I digress. Because, like, the whole time he's trying to hypothesize, like, did you forget that you had to bury this cat fucking 4 or 5 feet in the ground, cover it with dirt, and then you put a cairn on top of it, which is, like, its headstone, like, rocks.
Yeah. I get what, like, you're saying, and, like, I do, but at the same time, I think, for example, if something dead walked through my door, you would also probably try to explain this, because you're like, well, that's not possible. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So and he even said, he was like, after we did that, and, like, I realized, like, we did go up to, like, the second burial ground, he was like, I had a feeling this fucking cat was coming back. Like, he was like, I knew. Like, part of me knew. And, like, exactly. As a reader, you get that sense, too. Like,
for sure.
You're like, ah, this cat is coming alive.
Yeah. Hence the pet cemetery. So he walks on over to Judd's, and he's like, you got a lot of talking to do, buddy.
Yeah. And so Judd gives him the whole lore. Long story short, it's, like, an old Native American burial ground. It's just, like, a mystical, both probably, place. And Judd was like, yes, Spot did die twice. I buried him once there, and then I buried him when he died of old age. Now, the main thing about all this lore, number one, I want to say, I actually appreciate that he says it's a Native American burial ground and leaves it ambiguous. I think the problem with horror movies and books now is they try to explain everything. Oh, it was this, it was that. Leave things just spooky and unexplainable, and I appreciate that more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. I just wanted to make that point. Number two, what's really important to know about this lore, aside from all the things that Judd says, he explains that things that are buried in this ground don't come back quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, Spot was fine, but he was fucked up. Like, he smelled like shit. He was like, I gave him a bath. It would be like washing, like, just meat. Like, he wasn't. Meat. Yeah, he was like, he had this aura about him where, like, you did not want to touch him. My mom never petted him ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know when something's wrong and you feel it, but you can't explain it? Like, that's kind of what Judd is saying with these animals.
Mm-hmm.
And he explains lots of them did this. You know, it was common knowledge.
Someone it was, like, local lore, right? So, like, many people knew of this place, and they all knew if they were to bury their animal there, like, the animal would come back.
And the one guy buried a bull, fucking giant, and he, that one.
A
bull,
a rabbit, cats, dogs, there's a bird.
Yeah, but what's important, though, to mention with the bull is he said he was the only animal that he knew of that came back mean. And, like, they had to put it down, like, the revived bull. They had to like kill it because it was like chasing people and like being like really fucked up. So like, not only do things not come back right, but sometimes it's like not just not right. It's bad. Mm-hmm. It's not good. So Judd's telling this to Lewis, and Lewis is like, what the fuck? Like,
he's like, what did you just make me do?
Right. And Judd makes a good point. He's like, listen, I know that like your wife doesn't want to talk about death, whatever. And he's like, this might help Ellie actually get used to the idea because she might notice that the cat has changed and she might kind of be like, I don't know what happened, but something's weird. And like, I'd rather him just not be here.
Which is what happens.
It is, because church is weird as fuck.
Yeah. And he like never purrs. He's not like cuddly. He smells like crap.
He's killing things aggressively.
Yeah. And like they come back from Thanksgiving and Ellie like immediately has an aversion towards him.
Yeah. She's like, he smells. Why does he look weird?
She's like, get this cat away from me.
Well, because he describes his eyes always like these like lifeless and like he stares at you with like an unsettling, like knowing, I guess, be the word. Like he paints a very detailed and creepy fucking image of this cat. Like I would want this cat nowhere near me. Or like Lewis will lock it out and it's back in the house. Like, no fucking thank you, cat.
Well, that's a thing, right? And it's like, this is like a thing in all horror movies and I'm assuming books. Like, you know, if you bring something back from the dead, it's pretty much never like it was before, because there's no way that you can replicate personality, right? And like, side note, this is a big conversation with like the whole idea of cloning, especially in animal cloning, how like there's celebrities, is it Barbara Streisand, who has had the same dog for like 20 years but it's been cloned like 3 or 4 times, but each dog has
that real
personality. No, it's like a real thing. I did a paper on it in school. Yeah.
No, not cloning itself. The fact that Barbara Streisand has the
same dog. If it's Barbara Streisand specifically, but it's somebody.
But that's real. Like, someone really has done this.
Yes. You can that's do fucked. It.
Don't tell Ryan.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, and I think, again, it begs the question of, like, if something is dead, something died about it, right? And so, yeah, bringing it back.
Yeah, it is Barbara Streisand.
That's crazy.
Thank you.
It is never good. But like, so that's what Lewis battles with. And he's like, okay, this is clearly bad, right? The cat is back from the dead. But he's like, listen, like Spot was never the same, but he was fine. Like, so, okay, great. Like, even if he's not the same, maybe he's just a little funky. They said that he's like a little disoriented, the cat. He's kind of clumsy. Like, and he was like, you know what? Fuck it. But Lewis, as he's experiencing it, is noticing like this like just unrightness. Like he's like, something is unwell.
Yeah. And you know,
so I was gonna ask real quick, at this point, like, did you have any speculation like that this was where it was going or no?
No.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I kind of had a feeling it would involve some type of human resurrection.
So at the conversation,
I didn't know that it was gonna follow.
Yes.
The way it did.
So I just wanted to mention, when he's on the porch talking to Judd about that whole lore, that's when he asks, has, you know, a human been buried there? And Judd's like, absolutely not. That was when that happened. Because then Lewis is like aware, like, my cat just fucking came back to life. And Judd was like, don't even think about those things. And Lewis ends that chapter by saying, like, I saw fear on his face, but I also later then realized it seemed like he was lying. So I just wanted to mention that before we continued.
Yeah. So, I mean, things are going well for the Creeds. life's just moseying along. Yep. And then Stephen King hits us with this, you know, little chapter about how he took his son Gage out to a field to fly a kite. And ended the chapter saying, little did I know that was going to be Gage's last day alive. And I was like, oh, okay.
And that was how part one ended.
Yeah. So now, obviously, we know something's going to happen. So then at this point, I was like, okay, the fucking kid's going to come back. And that's very interesting to me.
Why so?
I think if we were to go into the layers of grief, maybe we could find a solution. But like that, the idea that your psyche could split, like fracture, like in half, and you think that this is like a plausible idea is insane.
I mean, what I think is also even more insane is the fact that you see your cat is fucked up. And he's like amazing. So after part one, we know that Gage. Yes, it's Gage. I literally say the wrong one in my head and I'm like, that's it. Okay, anyways. We know that Cage. No, it's Gage. Whatever. I can't. If I say one or the other, I don't care. We know the fucking baby's gonna die. But in part two, it's like a slow build up to it still.
Oh my god, yeah. This was excruciatingly slow. Which I was not really happy about, but it's fine.
Some parts I liked, like when Rachel was talking about her sister Zelda and like that whole like again, like you almost got the other end of it, right? It's building that idea that sometimes dead is better. Her sister had this like, I don't know, spinal disease or something like that. Her back was fucked up and she like pretty much slowly suffered and diminished in bed. And so the point was like, we wanted her to be at peace. Like, it was hard for her and all of us. And so, like, I think those little conversations in the slow part just added to the overall, like, message, you know? Which I think, again, I agree with excruciating, but I think looking back was well done.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I mean, it was all right. I mean, I was just waiting. I was like, when's this guy just gonna fucking bury the kid? Well, anyways, he eventually does, right? So, Gage, okay, so anyways, the kid, they're outside playing one day, and Gage runs into the road and a fucking truck comes and smithereens him all over the floor.
Can you imagine?
No, because I would probably implode on the spot.
And, like, he's, like, running after him, and the kid thinks it's a game, so he continues to run. Bro.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, that's, anyways, like, a fucked, like, thing to write. Like, you have to be fucking sick to be like, let's kill the kid with the fucking truck. He was like, let's fucking smash this baby. And then he's like writing about like the one sneaker and like he got dragged and the baseball hat full of blood. I was like, bro.
Yeah, that was crazy. He really got into it.
Like, and again, he's so detailed with everything, but I was like, maybe this is one thing that you didn't
yeah
have to be.
So anyways, they are all besides themselves, obviously, except Lewis. He has, like, this, like, resolve about him. And you know right away, obviously, what's going to happen. But it's interesting to see his character develops, like, slowly crumble apart.
Yeah, develop is probably the wrong word.
Yeah, like,
diminish.
I was going to say, what's the opposite of develop?
Yeah, he loses his fucking grip.
Yeah, he really does. And, like, there were parts when I was reading the book where I was like, am I the insane one? Like, I'm so, like, what are we doing here? But anyways, so they have the funeral for Gage. They put him in a little coffin. And meanwhile, before Gage gets killed, Norma gets killed.
Well, she just dies.
Whatever.
I mean, there's a difference.
Okay, whatever, she's dead. So she dies, and, like, Lewis is there with Judd while he's making all the decisions for, like, the funeral and whatever. So then when Gage dies, Judd is with Lewis while he's, like, making the decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting that it's because of Norma that Judd brought Lewis to the pet cemetery to begin with, because she has, like, a heart attack, remember? And then Lewis is able to give her, like, medicine out of his fucking black market bag he has in his closet. And she's, like, she lives. She's fine. But in return, Judd was like, I'm going to repay the favor. And that's when he was like, oh, you're going to bury Church and he's going to come back to life. So that kind of kicks off the whole thing now, thinking about it.
Because he was like, oh, like, this is kind of like a, you did me a favor by, like, saving Norma. And so, like, this is kind of, like, a weird favor to, like, save your daughter's cat.
Yeah. But then what I think is weird is that, like, Stephen King talks about how, like, when Lewis is trying to decide what they're going to do with the coffin, apparently there's, like, two different ways that you can seal it in the ground.
I was hoping he said this.
You know, one way is, like, I guess, cheaper and just like wood and like whatever and like a slab of cement, whereas like the other way is a bit more expensive, but like no one's getting in there again.
Like, yeah, and like it'll preserve the body longer. Like it's just, yeah, you know.
So, and Lewis chose the one where obviously that you can break into the grave. And Judd was like, "What are you thinking, Lewis? Don't be thinking what you're thinking." And Lewis is like, "I'm not doing nothing. I don't know."
And what also, at this point, Lewis really isn't thinking it himself.
Okay, but now here's the thing: we don't know, right? We're only getting glimpses of like when he's lucid, you know.
I agree, and I think it's like a deep subconscious thing. I'm not saying that he never thought of it, but I think that his point of view in this book, he is very much so stream of consciousness writing to us his conscious thoughts. I think this is what ties into the part of the Pet Sematary that's like there's this power that's like calling, and it's almost out of their hands. Now, can you say that's insanity? Sure. That's, you could just say that it's insanity. Mm-hmm. But it's this unknown like force.
Well, and that's only because they went there.
Well, and that's, and at one they point
went
in the book,
over the deadfall, which you're not supposed to do. So, but it's like it almost like attaches to like your person, right?
Well, right, because now it's attached to Lewis. Well, that's what I was gonna say. Like Judd, at one point, before anything happens with Lewis's son and he loses his mind completely, Judd explains like I was brought there for Spot, and like it wanted me back, and so like I brought you there not even really thinking and like knowing it wasn't a good idea, but still brought you there. And he was like I think that place like is what killed your son and your cat, like because it knew that I knew about it, and like I would bring you there for the cat, and then you would eventually come to that conclusion about your son. Like it works in mysterious ways, and it like wants this like poison seeping into the land kind of situation, which
so that's,
I like the vibe.
So that's the thing, right? So it's like, you know, you're giving sentience to a location, specifically like a Native American burial ground, which like if you have seen any horror movies, this is like a common trope, I feel. You know, and like even like in life when like things go awry in a house, people are always like, oh, is it on a burial ground or something?
Yeah,
you know, like,
they
that's
do.
Like, oh, that's always said, right? So, you know, whether it be just like all of it as a whole, or if it's just like one quote unquote spirit like leading the whole, like whatever it is, I think the personification of a setting to have the effect that it has on the characters in the book was like not, like, it wasn't novel, you know what I mean? Like, to me, I was like, yeah, of course. You know, I wasn't
Yeah,
like, wow.
No, it wasn't, like, unique. Right. I get what you're saying. But I did appreciate that was the reasoning. Because, again, like, in this book in particular, it's like, is grief just making this man insane? Or is there really forces, like, guiding him? And I think that was done well and, like, ambiguously. And because Lewis explains in the book, as things progress, right, so they bury their son, they have the funeral, and now he starts doing things almost out of his control. Again, is it the grief and like he knows what he wants to do, so is that talking? Or is it truly like this power he can't control? Because all of a sudden he's like, Rachel, I think you should go to your parents in Chicago. Get the fuck out of here, please. And she's like, our kid just died. Like, I don't want to do that. And he's like, no, I think you really should go. I'll come back in 3 days. Fine. And she's like, okay, because he's like insistent, like.
Yeah, and now this is where I got confused, because like the way he was wording it to me was like, oh, like just go be with your parents for a few days and like I'll come and join you. You know, we'll like recoup there and then we'll come back home. But that wasn't the plan at all, because then later on he was saying that like he was trying to get all the affairs in order for them to move back. So I don't know. I don't know if like that was just me being stupid or like.
No, I think he was saying the plan was like he was going to bury the kid. And then if it was a disaster, he was going to just fucking kill him. Be like, all right, we tried. I'm going to go join him. And then if it worked out and like he was fine, then he was going to be like, all right, we got to go to like Disney World and like Florida. He mentions that a lot. And, like, just tell Rachel, like, don't ask questions, just meet me in Florida, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he was kind of just like seeing how it played out, like without his family being there. And so at this point, what's really interesting is Ellie is losing her shit, losing it. She's like, something's wrong. We cannot leave Dad. Like, she's screaming, she's crying.
And they're just putting it off as just
grief. Trauma. Right.
Trauma, you know, which logically makes sense. But I think, and that's what I feel like is interesting, is that, like, the foreshadowing is coming from everybody else.
Yes.
Like, everyone closest to Louis. Which I feel makes it, like, that much more a little bit spookier. Because, like, they don't know what's going on, but, like, they're just talking.
And they feel something.
And it's, like, prophesizing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and the daughter is, like, saying, like, she's having all these dreams, whatever. And so, finally, they leave. Okay, fine. And now, once they get to Chicago, Ellie's really losing it. She's like, I had a dream about Victor Pascal. And they're like, what? And, like, the mom is like, oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
And she's saying all this stuff. She's like, I don't know what's going on, but something with, like, Daddy and the cat. Like, something is fucked up, basically, this five-year-old is saying.
Sitting at a table.
Yeah, and the mom.
Blood.
Yeah, and the mom's like, I gotta go home. So her parents also think she's crazy, but she tries to go on every last flight ever, whatever. And
okay,
so,
but, like, Rachel also, I feel like she's known.
Yeah.
As soon as she landed in Chicago, I feel like she knew.
Yeah. Well, then she was debating, like, is he gonna kill himself, Louis?
Yeah. Yeah,
she But she said that she had this inherent, like, fear and, like, something was wrong. So she was, like, trying to get going. She gets all of her flights home, whatever. And she said, like, you know, Ellie had this almost adult look of, like, relief. Like, please go.
Yeah.
So now at this point, she keeps calling home and no one answers. So she calls Judd. And she's like, hey, like, where's Louis? And he's like, where are you? And she's like, we're in Chicago. And Judd's like, fuck, fuck, like, fuck. Like, this is so bad. So now they have this plan. So Rachel's on her way home. Judd won't tell her what's up. But Judd's like, I'm going to sit awake and I'm not going to let him do it. And so now Louis is, like, losing his shit. He's fucking – I mean, he has this whole elaborate plan. And this part is very detailed. I didn't mind this part being detailed so much because I was, like, almost – it's unrealistic to believe.
Bro, the whole cemetery scene of, like, him trying to break into the cemetery and, like, get the kid's body, I was, like, not about at all.
I get what you're saying.
I don't care, bro. Like, just tell me you get the kid and you're going to Pet Cemetery.
No, and I felt that was half of how I felt. The other half of me was like, in some books, when something happens, you're like, but how would they do that? You know, like, wow, how convenient. They just got the body and now here we are. You know what I'm saying? I almost was like, I appreciate the thought that went into this, that Stephen King was like, oh, I'll tell you how to get your kid out of a cemetery. And I was like, respect. You really thought about how to dig up a body. I was like, Stephen King, have you done this? Like that's how realistic it was.
Yeah, which, okay, whatever. It's fine.
I agree. As a reader in the moment, you're like, okay, like, let's go bury the kid, you know, of course.
But, like, to me, that point, that was just, like, not interesting to me at all. What was more interesting was, like, this idea of, like, this unknown force keeping everyone away from Louis. So, like, Judd keeps falling asleep. He can't stay awake. He's had, like, a few cups of coffee, and he just, like, he can't stay awake. He dozes off. Rachel, she misses her flight. She rents a car, but, like, she can't stay awake while she's driving the car. She ends up at a truck stop, and then she goes to get coffee. She drinks 5 cups of coffee. She goes back to the car. Brand new car, by the way. And it doesn't start.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that was more interesting to me. Like, at that point, I was looking more forward to, like, Rachel's chapters than I was for Lewis's, because I was like, this guy's still at the fucking cemetery.
I think it creates a very unique space of, like, discomfort, right? Like, you have that feeling with Rachel and Judd of, like, you know it's important and nothing's working your way. Like, that, like, desperation, like, you're, like, sweating and you're, like, you know something's wrong and you're not going to make it in time. That's the worst feeling ever.
Mm-hmm.
That was their chapters. And then
I think that's what made me the most, like, anxious towards the end of the book. Because I was like, oh, my God, are they going to just make it? Or, like, what's
going on? But then, like, it was weird. For me, it was really unique because those chapters gave me that feeling. But then Lewis's chapters, like, I almost wanted it to speed along because you knew no matter what, they weren't going to make it. And it was almost like just do it, dude. And like, it was a weird feeling. And like, it was almost like watching like a car crash and you can't look away. Like, that's how I felt about Lewis. Like, I was like, he's fucked. There's no hope for this guy.
Yeah, he's beyond saving.
And like, I was like, just get me there. Like, just get me to the disaster. Like, it's almost like knowing something bad's gonna happen and it's like drawn out and you're like, just get it over with. I'm like, the kid's gonna be fucked up. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So it was like, oh, it was like a fucked up thing to like, you're like, you wanted them to get there quicker, but they couldn't. And so like, you almost want him to take longer, but then you were like, just get it over with, because no matter what, like, the world is gonna stop them.
Yeah. But then there's like, also you start to see the lapses in his psyche. You know, the guy just broke into a cemetery to fucking dig up his dead child's corpse, and he's going through all of these, you know, crazy things to get the kid back to the car. And he, you know, there's like, then there's a dog that's barking and he's like freaking out, right? So he just throws the kid in the passenger side, gets in the car, and the first thing he thinks about is like, what if I put him facing the back and he's not actually sitting towards the front? I'm like, bro, the kid's fucking dead. Does that matter at this point?
But
he said he's gonna throw his body down the hill. Like,
he literally was like, I couldn't start driving until I knew
he was facing the right way. And he's like sitting there like poking his face to feel for his like and, nose.
I was like, bro. He like left the keys in the ignition. Like, he was so thought out everything else. And like, he almost lost his keys. We left him in the car. Like, he's losing it. He's fucking losing it.
Yep. And, you know, and then just when it was like, oh, and it was like 1:42 and like the headlights of the Prius, whatever, pulled into, you know, Lewis's driveway and Creed Bratton was sound asleep. I was like,
Creed Bratton. No, not Creed Bratton. Although I do kind of imagine Judd like Creed, but yeah.
Right?
Anyways. Yeah, that is.
I meant just.
I was like, Creed Bratton's not here.
I'm remixing this story real quick.
Right.
Judd is fast asleep.
But, right, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and so I don't think I was really spooked out until he got like halfway through up to the cemetery and he like saw that thing, the Wendigo.
The Wendigo? Yeah.
Yeah. Then I was like, okay, like, this is getting somewhere, you know? Yeah, so he meets that fucking cannibalistic shapeshifter thing in the woods. He just moseys on by, buries his
like,
kid.
He's like, sorry, I got a job.
Yeah, buries the kid and then fucking leaves.
Goes back home.
And at that point, I'm like, okay, well, now that that's happened, where are we going from here? And I was not expecting what happened to happen.
Okay. What did you expect before we tell them what actually happened?
I thought that the kid was going to come back to Lewis in the house. And, you know, him and, because obviously there's the only one in the house, right? So I was thinking that, like, Lewis and Gage were going to be, like, putzing around a little bit. And then by nightfall, Lewis was going to be, like something was going to happen. Like, not something major that did happen, but, like, something was going to happen, and then he was going to have to take the kid out.
And then he
was going to move back to Chicago with his wife and Ellie.
Right. Well,
that's
what
I thought. Yeah. I was a bit too, I guess, vanilla in my assumptions.
Right. Yeah, because we got spicy. So, Lewis goes to bed. He's like, I'm fucking tired. I just dragged a body, like, miles. And he goes to bed. Now, Rachel finally gets home. She's like, oh, I'm going to go right to Judd's house. Okay, fine. So now in this process, we, you know, get a little glimpse that these little feet walk past Lewis and they go in his medical bag and they grab something that shines in the light and you're like, oh, it's a knife. It's a fucking knife.
Yep.
Okay, fine. And so then we flash and there's the screen door at Judd's house opens and he's like, Lewis. And he's like, oh, it's not fucking Lewis. It's just not Lewis. And I was like, damn. Like, it's one thing to, I'm serial killers, things that kill, whatever, are spooky. Kids that fucking kill, that's a whole new level of like fucked up.
Well, yeah. So then this was reminiscent to me of Chucky. And I told you this.
It was. Which I didn't hate. I guess my question is, like, why was Gage the only, like, maniac? Like,
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh,
I
mean, because also, I don't know. Oh, when Lewis was thinking about burying Gage up there, Judd discloses they did bury a body up there, not him, but someone in the town. This guy lost his son in the war, and so he buried him up there. And he was, like, weirdo. Like, a fucking weirdo. And he
would,
like,
walk. Yeah, but he wasn't violent.
Correct. Like, that's why I'm confused, like, too. But they did mention that they're, like, this weird all-knowing, like he was mean. He was mean, not violent. Remember when they all went to go, like, confront him and he
was,
like...
Well, he wasn't, like, vicious, you know? Like, it's not like, you know, he was fucking dragging around a scalpel, fucking killing everyone on the road.
No, for sure, for sure. But he was definitely mean. He was malicious. Like, he would say things. Apparently, he would say things that, like, no one knew, but, like, your deepest, darkest, like, secrets. Like, there's, like, a power in these, like, undead now, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, obviously we know that it's Gage at the door and... Church walks by and Judd's like, oh, I'm so fucked. They're like both here. Like, great. Like, fuck.
Tag team.
And on top of like the fact that there's this undead toddler looking at you, which is terrifying enough to make you fucking die, he then in his little child baby voice starts like demonically yelling at Judd. And I was like, no, no.
Okay. And now this is where I'm confused because, like, how do you let a 2-year-old overpower you? Judd, I mean, like, come on, you fucking were able to climb the side of this mountain to get to the cemetery. Like,
but was I'm that sure... magic?
Okay, but I'm sure the old fucker has some type of, you know, vigor in him. This is life or death. I felt like he put up no fight.
You're probably scared shitless. You're probably just like,
Okay, but don't you have, like, adrenaline running in your body? I don't know. Yeah, when I'm scared shitless, I'm like, fucking, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, kick that motherfucker square in the little head.
Literally.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you literally could, like, fuck his, like, fucking scalpel. Literally drop kick that bastard baby.
It's not like he was holding, like, a big butcher knife.
No, he's a little baby scalpel.
You know, a scalpel is small.
Small. It's like a, yeah, bullshit.
Judd probably could have lifted his leg and stomped on his head, and that would have been it.
Didn't something happen, like, Judd, like, was walking back and, like, tripped, and then, like, he jumped on top of him, like, you know? I think there was, like, something happened like that, where it was like...
Church tripped him.
Oh, my God, the demon twins working together, bro. What? Yeah, that's fucked. And so, yeah, so we know Judd is no mas, no more.
Poor Judd. I felt bad that was his ending.
Yeah, Godspeed, Judd. Also, side note... I really hope what fucking demon Gage said about Norma was not true. I'm very upset. I loved them.
I hope it was true. Because fuck Judd for doing that to her.
For what?
He was cheating on her.
At the whorehouse. He said everyone did it back in those days.
Okay, Jamie. I know for sure if we had this conversation now, you would not be saying this about Ryan.
But baby demon Gage was saying that she was butt fucking all of his friends. That's a different kind of hurt.
Okay, well.
Wow.
So is your man going to the whorehouse? I mean.
I thought they were a cute couple, though. You know, like little old couples. I'm not trying to imagine Norma taking it up the ass from his friends or simultaneously Judd going to the whorehouse. Like, I want to imagine them wholesome. Like, she made him an apple pie.
Which is fine.
Ugh,
you can live in your delusions. I mean, but we don't know. Who cares?
Well, whatever. Baby Gage told...
They're both dead.
Yeah. Baby Gage did tell Judd, like, your wife fucked all your friends.
I thought it was really funny when he was like, and they were all laughing about it behind your back. That was so funny. That was
funny. Yeah, that's like a spooky scene, though, you know? Like, there's a little, ooh, I didn't like it. I saw it very visually in my head.
I literally imagined him as Chucky.
Yeah. And so, Judd, dead. So now, all of a sudden, Rachel pulls up and you're like, oh, no.
You're next.
So Rachel goes in and she's like, whatever. She hears like laughing upstairs. Also, kid laughing. Fuck kid laughing.
Creepy.
So creepy.
Yeah.
And
so
she goes, no, not
cute. Kids should not laugh.
And so she goes upstairs and sees Gage. Now,
but it's
this
not Gage.
Oh, it's like her sister.
Yeah.
But it's also not her sister. It is Gage because...
Well, yeah. So, like, she says... Okay, so in the story, we learn that as Jamie said, like, Zelda is her sister, and she was, like, slowly decaying in her bed. She couldn't move, and she was also, like, mad at everyone, so she would, like, piss herself and, like, laugh and, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But after she died, Rachel was having all these nightmares that, like, Zelda would, like, jump out of the closet and was like, oh, I'm gonna get you next, and, like,
right.
basically, like, jump scare the shit out of her in these terrible nightmares. And so, like, Rachel, as a full-grown adult, is still, you know, worried about these nightmares. So she walks up the, the stairs, and there's fucking Zelda, and she's like, I'm gonna get you now, bitch. And, you know, she's, like, screaming, but then, like, Zelda's face morphs into gauges, and she's like, what the fuck's going on? And then next thing you know, Chucky's fucking stabbing the crap out of her.
Which I will say, that chapter ended, like, which I liked, like, kind of ambiguously, like, she said, like, oh, he ran into her arms, and I was like, oh, maybe he's hugging her, maybe he was mad at Judd, because Judd was trying to stop it,
yeah,
and so, like, the power was, like, you know, fuck you, Judd, and that's what Judd says, like, oh, it's gonna get me for, like, trying to, like, prevent this, and I was like, oh my god, this is fine, like, he was just mad at Judd, and he's hugging his mother. I had such high hopes, you know, like,
you've
seen
the movie, why would you think that?
I kind of forget the end. I knew the kid got hit by a car and, like, came back, but I didn't remember, like, you know.
Gotcha.
And so now Lewis wakes up and he sees all these footprints and then fucking a random car across the street, and he's like, oh, dear.
Well, no. At first he was like, oh, that's nice, Judd has a visitor. And he's like, I'm going to go make myself breakfast.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Like, what a psychopath.
But then he sees the footprints.
Yeah, and then he goes up to his room and realizes that his meticulously well-organized bag is, like, thrown to shit. And he's like, oh, fuck.
And then he realizes
it's Rachel.
And he's like, oh, fuck, times two.
So he heads on over, and he obviously has a plan. So Church is on the car, and he's like, come here, kitty, 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 kitty. And he gives him some dry food or wet food, some type of food that's not a dead animal. And while the cat's eating, he fucking stabs it with the needle.
Morphine. Night.
So Church is dead, and he's like, oh, I got three more vials. So he's on a mission. He knows he's gonna have to kill his son, right? So he goes in the house and he's like putting the scene together. Now this is where things really kicked up for me, because
the last like 10 pages.
Yeah. So like he goes in the kitchen, boom, Judd's dead. He's on the floor. Fucking stabbed to death. He's like, great. Goes up the stairs and he sees Rachel, and doesn't he think that she's just like sitting there, and then he realizes that like she's dead, but
I think he's like in denial. I think he knows right away, but then he's like, no.
But I think, doesn't he like slump to the floor too, and isn't he just like staring at her, and then he like mentions that something looks off about her. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh god, do not tell me what I think is gonna happen. And sure enough, she's been eaten by Gage.
Eaten?
Did you miss that part of the book?
I don't know. Maybe. Did I block it out? Are you sure this happened?
Yeah, let me pull up the receipts real quick.
Yeah, what?
Because why else would they talk about the cannibal fucking Wendigo? And he was like, oh, if you happen across the Wendigo, he passes like the cannibalistic curse to you.
This is crazy. If this is, I don't know. I am questioning you publicly because what?
Yes.
Are you fucking sure he ate his mom?
Yes.
I don't know.
Let me find this real quick.
Yeah, no, I need you to, actually. I'm also going to Google, did Gage eat his mom?
Yes, Jamie. Okay, hi Church. I'm so sorry.
Oh my god, what?
He does, I told you, right? Yeah, Rachel had not just been killed. Something had been something had been at her. Click. That click was in his head. It was the sound of some relay fusing and burning out forever. The sound of lightning stroking down in a direct hit. The sound of a door opening. He looked up numbly, the scream still shivering in his throat, and here was Gage at last, his mouth smeared with blood, his chin dripping, his lips pulled back in a hellish grin. Suddenly he saw her, really saw her, and Lewis Creed began to scream. Yeah, the kid fucking ate his mom.
Yeah, I googled, did Gage eat Rachel? And it says, Gage ate one eye and part of the flesh on her face.
Well, that the book doesn't say that specifically, but
well, that adds to it.
Anyways.
Wow. That's fucked up.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was going to happen. I was waiting for it. I was like, there's definitely going to be some type of fucking cannibalism in this book.
Wow, okay. Well, so his demon child ate his wife. And so Lewis is like, fuck this kid. Which Lewis does fine. He's like, okay, you fucking two-year-old. Stabs him. Like, you know, like very easily.
Which is crazy, again, just to show like the psychotic break within the brain. Right? Like, he went through all this trouble to dig up his dead kid to bury him again so he would come back to life because he loved him so much and he wanted him to be still a part of the family. But then in the instant that he realizes something is amiss, he's like, yeah, this kid's gotta die. He's gotta die.
I mean, how? Amiss is crazy. He just killed two people and ate his mother. So, like, amiss is kind of a, like a...
I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done it. I'm just saying, like...
But again, that begs the question where I really lean into, like, this, like, outer force. Like, again, also I like the fact that Lewis is a doctor and he like knows better, right? Like, he was like, yeah, church is unnatural, like it's better off, and he even says like Gage is better off just dead, but he can't fight it because he knows it's a possibility, whatever. Okay, fine. So he fucking kills the kid. He's like, fuck it. And so then he lights the house on fire and he's like, you know, like I imagine like one of those movies where they walk out and the house like blows up behind them.
Yeah.
And so his doctor friend, the book ends. His doctor friend's like, oh, I'm
this
really...
This I was not expecting.
No, me either. His doctor friend's like, I'm worried about Lewis. So he goes to check on him and he sees this figure walking up the hill. And right away I'm like, stop.
Carrying a white bundle.
Yep. And I'm like, no, 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 no. So this guy starts running. He's like, I don't even know why I'm running. He's walking up a hill. Like, who fucking cares? You know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And he catches up to him. And Lewis apparently is old. He's like, has white hair. He like looks like a 90-year-old. Like, he's all fucked up.
This is where I was really confused.
I think it's just like maybe just spooky or like the trauma or like the power or whatever. Because, you know, they say when like a trauma happens, you could like just go all white. And, you know, like that does.
No, but I don't think it was I don't think Lewis actually looked like that. I think Steve was imagining that.
No, because after the fact, when Lewis is talking to the cops, he said he had to wear a baseball cap because he's like, it'd be crazy if I had all white hair all of a sudden.
Okay, which then is okay. Finish the story and then I will tell you what I was thinking after.
Okay, okay. And so Lewis is very clearly going to bury Rachel in the burial grounds.
And
he does, yeah. And his thought process is, well, I waited too long with Gage. Clearly 5 days, 3 days, whatever, too much. Rachel just died. It's gonna be fine. Perfect. And so he buries her and the book ends and he's sitting there with his fucking crazy white hair and just lost his fucking total shit. And she puts a hand on his shoulder and just says, darling, and then the book ends. And I was like, no. Also, you have a whole child alive and you just pretty much were like, fuck you, Ellie. But that's fine.
Yeah. So anyways, right off the bat, when we first started reading this book, I was mad sus of Judd. Mad sus.
Aww.
And I thought that something was going to happen towards the end. And so, like, obviously this is just, like, a working theory. It's not even a theory. It's just, like, some, you know, little ideas streaming around in the ether. But, like, I was thinking that, like, what if it's more to the effect of, like, every person who's gone up to that pet cemetery was now being reflected in Lewis. Like, that's who's giving you the power. Like, the power of your grief to push you up the deadfall so you can get up there to bury whoever it is that you're trying to bury. And, like, that is, like, where the power draws from, right? It draws from those negative emotions. And then, so Steve, who's obviously, you know, a third party, he's not part of this at all, you know, he's worried about Lewis because he's his friend. So he's following him around. But as soon as he enters the pet cemetery, he was like, oh, this seems right. Like, I should follow him and make sure he's okay. And while they're going up the deadfall, Lewis is, I'm pretty sure verbatim, saying exactly to Steven what Judd said to him. And they
Yes.
And
it almost like possesses you.
Yeah. But then, like, I don't know. Like, is it like, does it hop from, like, person to person? Like, is the reason Lewis is, like, old and gray now is because, like, his he's the protege of Judd in this scenario. You know what I mean? You know, well, what I'm trying to say?
And also the point you're making is making me think additional things, which I like. I also really like how Lewis's friend, what was his name?
I think it was Steven or Steve.
Yeah, maybe Steven. Okay. So I also like, I think that the Pet Sematary also preys on people who like have issues, right? And so we learned about Judd, like cheating on his wife, whatever. Like there's like things, right? Like insecurities. We knew Lewis like didn't get along with like Rachel's family. Like why was that brought up? Like he's insecure a little. Like they didn't believe in him as a doctor. Whereas this guy, Steven, who seems to have like a very normal, all intents purposes, like fine, well-adjusted life. Once he's going with the Deadfall, he's like, I wanted to go. Something was pulling me. And then he snapped out of it and was like, I'm not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the first one we saw like resist that like pull.
Initially, yeah.
And like, so he was like, fuck you, Lewis. Go do whatever you're going to do because this seems bad. This is bad news. Yeah, and he said like he moved his family. He left that guy, Steven, because he was like, this is bad news. And so I think that was also a good way to end the book because you saw someone resist that. And again, he describes Steven as like a very like well-adjusted, normal person. Whereas you found out little kernels from like Judd's past life, which again, were not relevant, but they kind of were. Or like Lewis's relationship to his in-laws, you know, I'll pay you not to marry Rachel. Like you're never going to amount to anything. And so I'm wondering. Yeah.
And I was taking the money.
Right. Bye, Rachel. And so I'm wondering, right, if like people that are like insecure have issues, like it almost preys on the weak, you know?
Probably. That's usually how it always goes, right? It's never the tough people that got possessed.
Right. And so I think that was interesting as like just like a little like subtle thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, this book, again, do I think it was scary to the point where I was like, ah, no. And it also wasn't. I wouldn't say
it was like a scary book.
And it also wasn't.
It was a thriller. It was a thriller.
Yes. And it also wasn't like a page turner where I was like,
no.
Can't wait. And we have a page turner next week, so we're going to talk about that difference. It wasn't like that. It was very slow burn, but just the whole time you're reading it, you're almost uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you want it to happen quicker or you're just like, oh God, nothing's happening and it should be. What's going to happen? Like, you just felt uncomfortable reading this book.
Yeah.
But I liked that. Like, I was like, ooh, this brings out a new emotion I'm not used to when I'm reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was like, ooh, okay.
Ooh, anxiety while reading, but not, like, the good, like, they're going to fall in love anxiety or, like, or why even, can't they be together anxiety.
Right, or even spooky anxiety. It was just, like, discomfort. Like, it was just, like.
Like, you know something bad's going to happen and you can't do anything to stop it.
And, like, the details were just so crazy and almost to the point of, like, painstaking. Again, like, describing digging up his son's corpse. I was like, ooh, this is more than I ever cared to know, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, there was definitely a few parts in the book where, like, you know, I would read something and, like, have, like, an actual, like, auditory reaction.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen very often.
Right. Right.
But, yeah.
My typical auditory reaction for this book was absolutely not. I was like, nope. Okay, so what did you rate this book?
I think I gave it 3 stars.
I was expecting you to say that. I gave it 4.
Yeah, I just felt like it really wasn't worthy of a 4 for me. I could probably go back and change it. Maybe I'd do like a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of felt, where are my books? Oh, here they are. 3 stars. I just felt like I think I went in with a lot of expectations and I didn't get them. And I think that's what kind of threw me off, even though I had no idea what the book was about. Which I think is obviously, like, you know, on me. Like, it's not the book's fault. But I don't know. I think the slowness of the book is what I just really didn't gel with it. And, like, yes, the ending was crazy, but I felt like the slow buildup to it was not justified.
I get what you're saying, and I feel the exact same way. But the reason I ended up giving it 4 stars was because, again, I've never felt this way reading a book. Like, the discomfort and, like, I appreciated, like, all the work that went into it. Like, you know, you could tell he's a good writer. Like, and, like, he has a very certain style. And
yeah, for sure.
like it was all thought out, and like the slow burn again almost like made me just like very uneasy, uncomfortable. Like I've been rating books less emotionally lately, not fully, but like more from like the literary stance of like, okay, like I,
you're such a scholar.
I get what you're doing, and I, like, even if I wasn't like, oh, this is the best book ever, and I'm, like, turning page for page for page, right? Like, so for me, I could read a Colleen Hoover in, like, a day. Maybe, I don't know about now, because now I've noticed all these things literarily or whatever. But I used to be able to read them in a day, but now looking back, I'm like, that doesn't mean that it's a five-star book. Like, it's just easy. Whereas this, it might have taken me a little bit longer and, like, been a little bit more mentally, like, strenuous, but I was like, oh, I appreciate this fucking book.
Yawning.
You're like, that was boring.
I was like, actually this whole conversation sucked, but
yeah.
I mean, and then I was thinking about this too. I was, after I finished Pet Sematary, it was like, oh, it's probably like 11:30 at night, 12 o'clock at night. I was like, I was like, oh my god, I have to turn the lights off and go into bed alone.
Amazing.
That wasn't scared, but it was just like that unsettled feeling. You know?
It's unsettled for sure. And like I said, like I think horrors now, it's always like some bullshit reason, yada yada. Like that movie with fucking Nicolas Cage, I forget what it was called, Long Legs. Hated it. I hated that movie.
I still want to watch it though, but
it's just dumb. Like again, they try to explain everything, and it's always like, oh, this like this is what caused it, and I'm like, give me like a Blair Witch Project. Like we don't know what's going on. Like you know, like. The classic, just good. That's it. It could just be a demon. You know what I'm saying? Whatever. Speaking of movies, real quick, I just wanted to update you guys. It's just a demon. Right. It's just a fucking demon. But speaking of movies, real quick, I forgot. I wanted to say this in the beginning, but I didn't. I did watch It Ends With Us. Big negative from Jane Bo. It was what I expected.
A disappointment.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
I probably could go on and on about why I didn't like it. I won't. I just didn't get the same feeling from the book. I think Blake Lively's kind of a bimbo. they very much so made Ryle like the aggressor right off the bat, and that's like not necessarily how the book read. Like after the fact, you could see warning signs, but they very much made him like gaslighty slash like moments that he was cute in the book, like aggressive. Like the first night that she stayed over and they like didn't have sex, they just slept and they like kind of decided to be together. He was like a dick that whole scene. Like it was weird. Like I was like, that's not what happened, you know?
and realities differ.
Yeah. I watched it with Chelsea, Amelia and Ryan and everyone said it sucked. So that's that.
I will not be watching that.
Just a quick update before we ended.
However, I did want to mention that I think I'm going to watch the movie, Pet Sematary, the original.
Okay, so OG. We could do it together maybe because I haven't seen the original in a long time, but Ryan actually said he thinks the remake was better in one of the rare cases.
Okay. Yeah, because I know they did a remake, but I was like, I kind of want to watch. But I don't know how I feel about like watching the original and then like watching the remake like right after. I feel like that might be too much of the story. Who knows?
It's spooky season. Can't get enough.
Valid.
Other news. Housemaid is becoming a movie in New Jersey. And Sydney Sweeney.
Oh, it's in New Jersey?
Yeah, it's in Morristown. They're filming. Like, she's coming.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, a lot of people in the New Jersey book club, they were writing about it because they got, like, letters in their mailbox saying, like, we're looking for a house to film if you want to, like, volunteer your house in Morristown. Mm-hmm. So, and Sydney Sweeney is Millie. And Amanda Siegfried? I don't know how to say her last name.
Seyfried
is Nina.
Millie is the killer. Nina is the
mom.
The mom.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I'm into it. I'm excited.
I think Sydney Sweeney does a good job of playing like that fucking crazed bitch. Because if you've seen Euphoria, you definitely have seen that. But like,
yes. And like a doe, but starts off like doe-eyed, you know?
Yeah. I'm interested about Amanda Seyfried, though.
I'm ready. I did mention this to Ryan, and he's like, this is bad news for you. And I said, why? And he goes, because I can now marry Sydney Sweeney. And I said, well, that's ambitious, but
Why can he now marry Cindy? He
just,
I don't get it.
Like, I like, like, he just loves her, and like, she's coming close to Morristown. And like, I always told him, like, yeah, okay, if she ever wants to marry you, like, fine. Like, that's the one person, like, you're allowed, because she's hot as fuck. Like, I would also marry her. So he's taking his chance. I mean, I okay. also kind of want to go to Morristown and stalk her. So maybe I'll be there.
Let the people live.
Yeah, I know. I want to go see them. And that's
maybe
really.
Maybe she'll be down at Iron Bar.
Bro. I would cry, actually. Anyways, well, but I'm
tossing it up.
I'm excited. I'm excited. I think those were our only bookish updates from like prior episodes.
ACOTAR, the release date got pushed back until the end of 2025, early 2026.
Yeah.
So to say that I'm like probably 70% over SJM would be an understatement.
Valid and agreed.
When people tell me that they're reading ACOTAR now, I'm like, you know what? Don't ask me my opinion. Good luck.
But you tell me you're reading Fourth Wing and we'll chat.
Yeah. Yes.
So we will see you guys next week. Surprise, surprise. For, do you want to tell them what it is?
Hidden Pictures by
Jason.
By somebody.
I think it's Jason.
By somebody. Also, I thought this was a woman who wrote this book, and then it's not.
I think it's Jason.
It is Jason Rakulik.
Fuck yes. Rakulik. Amazing. This book has been picking up steam and been popular recently as well, and we kind of just wanted to add it to our docket. So
here we are.
Yeah.
Tune in next week. This was a really long episode. Wow. We haven't recorded a long one in a really long time.
I know. I was just thinking that when we were recording. But
Stephen Hoover was kind of long.
And Stephen King's a meaty man.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right? My book was 460 pages, I think. But, like, the font was small, you know?
Yeah. I think it just warrants. Because, again, there's all these subtleties he does. There's all this, like, nuance and, like, overarching themes. Like, he does a good job, so it's like it warrants a conversation on top of just the crazy bullshit he writes. So yeah, this is kind of like almost like a non-purposeful deep dive.
I think it will be a little bit of a while though if I'm gonna read Stephen King again,
like, probably
now that I know now that I know that his like what his writing style is. I just don't, I mean, I'm assuming his other books are kind of slow as well, like have a slow build up, so
yeah,
I'm not like, really about that right now.
I'm down to, like, read it, like, next October.
I'm not reading it.
I will. I've heard it's great. But, yeah, I'm, like, not going to read Stephen King.
I've seen the movie 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Are there 3 movies or just 2? I don't remember.
There's just 2.
Whatever. And yeah. I don't really like it.
Okay.
I'm not a clown person.
I mean, I would argue a lot of people aren't clown people.
I just, like, don't like that type of... Not that, like, it, like, makes me uncomfortable and scary. I just don't care for it. You know what I mean?
Valid.
Anyways.
All right. Well.
Jinx, you want me a soda? Thank you all for listening. We hope you're all having a great start to your spooky season. If you read Pet Sematary, definitely interact with us on all our socials so we can have a conversation. And like, comment, subscribe. Make sure push notifications are on. No.
Wow. Holy shit.
I'm also right. on YouTube lately. Sorry.
Amazing. All right, Howl Gal. And we will see you guys next week for our almost like little bonus episode.
Hidden Pictures. Jason, we're coming for you.
I'm sure he's pumped. All right. We love you guys. We'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Mwah, bye.
Ha 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 ha.
Oh, God. That was scary.